So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Politics.com. And if you guys in Louisville, I hope you're staying dry, man. I tell you what, this weather once again is taking, giving us a curveball. We've got nice rainy weather around 50 degrees, and we're going to be back down in the 30s like tomorrow or something. I don't know. It's crazy. So many people sick, I tell you what. We for you guys that are calling in first time, it's 858-683-1326. Or 502-805-0334 are the phone numbers. You guys on the listening queue, as always, we appreciate you. Just hit the number one on your dial pad, and we will get you on air as soon as possible. And for everybody else, if you want to, sign in and join us in the chat room. So many ways to talk, it's unbelievable. A lot going on. Mr. Martin should be joining us momentarily. But I tell you, you know, the story last week was Bobby Petrino being rehired at the University of Louisville. Yes, we called it. I told you guys that was the deal. I was wrong about one thing, though, and I gotta take credit and get smacked if I need to, but I said there was going to be a $20 million buyout as part of his contract. Turns out it was a $10 million buyout. But, you know, I'll take that. It's okay. So that was a big story of the week last week. We got so many things going tonight, and we'll get right to it as soon as we say hi to Mr. Martin. How are you, sir?
All right, Mr. Springsteen. Although, you know, we were kind of, really wasn't that far off. I mean, Petrino and his wife reportedly said, help, make it $100 million.
You know, well, that's it.
His jurors were probably like, no, because that gets cartoonish. But,
right.
Oh, well, football, you know, we'll see where it goes. But I tell you what, I'm with you. We both thought Petrino should get a second shot. And, boy, if he... rolling with it. I'm telling you, he's snatching up head coaches and defensive coordinators from other places that, you know, not only do the players seem to want to be a part of it, it seems like some fairly well-compensated coaches want to get in here and, you know, get what they hope is going at Louisville. So that was encouraging from not only a player standpoint, but a coach, you know, the fact that he's scoring from pretty good-name coaches. He's not bottom feeding from a bunch of guys that got let go.
Well, you're not going to bottom feed when you're in the ACC, and that's the big thing. You know, I think Bobby Petrino is going to take this to the next level. I think that Louisville can compete right away in the ACC. They did lose a couple of national recruits, you know, which was to be expected. That's pretty much normal. But they did lose that. So, you know, we'll see what happens with the rest of it. You know, in the meantime, though, we got a lot going on. I tell you, I was actually happy to see something, and I know that's hard to believe, but I was actually happy to see something the other day. Matt Bevin, as everybody knows, is running against Mitch McConnell in the U.S. Senate race here in Kentucky in the Republican primary. And one of the biggest drawbacks that I've had with Matt Bevin, and I've talked about it on the air, is he's not talking about what he's going to do. Mitch McConnell went into the gutter, and Matt Bevin went with him on the into the gutter. And he hasn't really done anything to stand out. Well, WFPL did a story last week talking about it at the end of the week. And Matt Bevin is going to stop going to the gutter, and he's decided to start talking about issues. And I think that's a great thing. One of the things, you know, that Bevin has talked about, you know, is the differences between him and McConnell, but he's never really outlined them. So he's talking about issues, the healthcare system. He opposes the NSA collection of phone data. He wants to end warrantless wiretapping. Wants to talk about the RAINS Act. You know, all of these different things. So he's finally sticking to issues and points instead of the gutter. That's a good thing, isn't it, for a new candidate?
No, absolutely. I mean, that's a good thing for any candidate. I mean, you know, when you're going up against an incumbent who has that, you know, whether they do it or not, that tends to be the preferred tack for going after an incumbent. But then, as you said, and I said when we were both, you know, candidates at one time, it's like, can we really just start talking about the issues, you know, even right. If you, there's a dozen issues, but if you just like to hunker down and just go, you know, give two or three very deserving ones the headlines that, you know, that they do deserve, like, you know, by all means, knock yourself out. You know, that's what it's supposed to be about. I mean, I've always said that, whether it's Republican, Democrat, or incumbent, or challenger, it's, you know, it seems like so many politicians and the voters seem to tolerate the crap. They'll basically tell you what they don't like.
Right.
You know, but, well, I'm against this, this, and this. And I don't like the way they did this, this, or that, or the other. Yeah, and like, okay, so you don't like it, so what are you going to do?
Well, that's it. And that's what I like, because now he's talking, I mean, he is going outside, you know, he is a critic of Obamacare, you know, and one of the things he points out now is the way to reform the country's healthcare system, and he's actually taking on conservative talking points. Imagine that, finally talking conservative values, but he's talking about how he favors tort reform, and he favors allowing citizens to purchase insurance plans across state lines. That was one of the biggest, that issue alone, the purchase insurance plans across state lines, is one of the biggest impediments to why healthcare was rising in the first place. And, you know, then they came up with this Obamacare crap, but he's wanting to roll back Obamacare, allow across state line insurance coverage, and that actually will fix the healthcare system in many, many ways. Would you agree?
No.
Why not?
I think tort reform helps. I think going across state lines helps, but let's face it, the insurance industry is going to figure out how to do things, and you still have to have certain parameters because, you know, the state line thing is, like I say, it helps. But there are bigger issues, and I go all the way back to Rand Paul, you know, who interviewed him when we were on the air at the radio station, and they talk about things like the way insurance is priced out. Yeah, I think
right.
You need to do it much more like life insurance. Rand Paul had the idea, it's like, you know, let's go in 5 or 10 year increments, like term life, you know, so people don't get sick and get wiped out. You know, let's fundamentally change it, but leave it in the free market.
Well, that's
again,
the thing, though.
Anybody, I haven't heard anybody do anything. Like I said, it's so complicated. And nobody's addressing the, you talk about a bad one. And again, Rand Paul brought this up on our show. 70% of what anybody spends on average for health care spent in the last 90 days of their life.
Right.
We need fundamentally, I mean, we're talking 70% of health care expenditures in the nation because, you know, you can't spend any more than you can on yourself. We're talking about 70% of the health care spending is end of life. We need to grow a set. The Democrats and liberals need to grow a set. The Republicans need to grow a set. And we need to look at that because if somebody says, well, here's where 70% of your expenditures are in 0.25% of your lifespan. It's like, you know what? I think we know where to look now, don't we? But
oh, I agree with you. I mean, I'm not saying that that's going to fix everything, but what I'm saying is to let the free market work to help control prices, that's always been one of the impediments because you take an insurance company in Kentucky, they're only allowed to sell in Kentucky. They can't cross state lines and offer the same plan in Tennessee or Indiana or Illinois. So you've got all these different price premiums, one price in Kentucky, one in Indiana, one in Illinois, one in Tennessee, whatever. They're all different prices, some higher than others. You know, this allows you to take that into the free market and expand it so that when you can go across state lines, you can actually lower premiums that way. I'm not saying it's going to fix the system, but I'm saying it's great to see.
Oh, no,
I'm saying it's great to see that they can't hurt.
Because being an employer who pays for health insurance in the state of Kentucky, you know, I've said on the show numerous times, one of the problems we have is a number of years ago, the Frankfurt crew decided they would fix insurance for us, and they ran most of the carriers off. Now, granted, some of them were probably underfunded, were subpar carriers.
Right.
As I say around here, it's the one big favor they did me, if you want to call it a favor, is when it comes time to bid your health insurance out. In Kentucky, hey, you only got to shop like three or four companies. You're not going to spend all week shopping them out because you get three or four bids. They're all within a few dollars of each other, and it's simple, but you're screwed. So it's like, yeah, by all means, bring some more in, please.
Well, for me, I mean, I'm just glad to see Matt Bevin going down the road and actually bringing issues into play instead of the gutter. Because if Matt Bevin wants any chance at taking on Mitch McConnell, he can't play Mitch McConnell's game, and that's what he's been doing. So I'm glad to see that he's at least putting it out there. But he favors tort reform, talking about insurance plans across state lines. He wants a permanent ban on earmarks. He backs the RAINS Act, which would give Congress the authority to overturn regulations that cost more than $100 million. These are the things we haven't seen. So this gives us more of a glimpse as to who Matt Bevin is as far as values are concerned. And that's what I'm getting at. This is what I've been wanting to see, and we're finally getting. We're finally getting
there. I think it helps generate a more informed voter, and strategically speaking, whether Matt Bevin wins or loses against Mitch McConnell, I think it's a wise move. You know, you want to get out there, and you want to at least put some of your ideas out there and get some play, because if your first move is running for U.S. Senate, you're probably not done. I can't imagine. So it's like, let's put some of I'm glad to see him going positive, putting some ideas out there, because if he doesn't win, then at least we know what Matt Bevin is about and start eyeing him up for another position, another office if he's game for it.
Well, there you go. And another story we were covering last week, we were talking about Ed Marksberry. And a 15-page letter that he had put together that Jake over at Page One Kentucky had published last week. Well, now it turns out the Republican Party of Kentucky is going to ask a U.S. attorney to investigate the claims that Ed Marksberry put out there, that he was offered future favors to drop out of the race against Allison Lundigan Grimes. I think that should be a no-brainer. You know, that is clearly a violation, and I'm not sure how it's going to work. But Steve Robertson has asked U.S. Attorney David Hill in Louisville to investigate the claims by Marksberry. So we'll see where that thing goes. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, it is a federal election, so it does involve the feds, at which point I say thank God, because, you know, what are the odds somebody like Conway would actually go after a Democrat?
Right. But it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see how it turns out, though, because going to the U.S. attorney instead of Jack Conway is a great move, because that takes it out of Jack Conway's hands. So we'll see what happens with it. In the meantime,
I tell you what. To be honest, I tend to lean towards Marksberry, because otherwise I can't see why a guy would do that. You know, make those accusations and not be able to back them up, at least to some degree. So. Right about now, I suspect, when that news came out, I suspect there are people who are asking questions as such. Is there any way we can scrub these phone records? No.
Right.
Is there any way? You think he screenshotted everything?
It's very possible. I tell you, it says a lot about Marksberry's character, too, because whenever you decide to do something like that, he is running as an independent in that race, by the way. But whenever you do something like that, you're taking a risk on how you're perceived and taking a risk on negative. You know, it's a bold step for him to make those charges. I would find it hard to believe that they wouldn't be true. And we have reached out to Ed Marksberry. He's definitely interested in coming on air. I'm going to try to work that out and see if we can't get it live next week. If we can't get it live, then we'll do a pre-tape and we'll air it during our regular scheduled program. But he's definitely willing to come on here and talk about it, so that's a great thing we're looking forward to. Louisville Metro Council District 9, apparently there's a third Democratic candidate who jumped into the race now. As we know, we already had Attorney Chris Hartley and gay rights activist Greg Bork, who filed to run in a Democratic primary to replace Tina Ward Pugh. And now we have a Molly Young Noe. She's a real estate broker, and she also owns a restaurant in St. Matthews, and now she's going to run as well. So far, the only one that's running as a Republican is Attorney Laura Rice. So we're keeping an eye on that as well. National news, Ed, I've got to get to some of this. We're going to get to Chris Christie in a minute. But this is a great story. I was really shocked to see this coming out of Top Right News. The Maricopa County Republican Committee, for you guys who are trying to wonder why that sounds familiar, that's where Sheriff Joe Arpaio is Maricopa County. It's the state's largest Republican group, actually voted to censor Senator John McCain. The vote was 1,150 to censor him versus 351 opposed. It passed overwhelmingly. And they censored him for a long and terrible record of drafting, co-sponsoring, and voting for legislation best associated with liberal Democrats. Essentially what the censor means is that the Republican leadership in Arizona will no longer support, campaign for, or endorse John McCain as their U.S. senator. That's pretty huge, isn't it?
Oh, it is, and it's a long time coming. I mean, yeah, McCain, he's overstepped the Maverick thing. I got the Maverick thing years ago. You know, he doesn't always vote the party line. I get that. But he's just really, I mean, from everything, when you look at what a true conservative is, especially Arizona, where Barry Goldwater came from.
Right.
You know, McCain is an interventionist when it comes to war, which is, you know, war is the ultimate big government, and he's all over the map. There's no consistency, and he had that wacky, kind of weird, his own sort of Obamacare with tax credits. I mean, the guy's all over the map. So, I can see that. He's still got a ton of money and a ton of name recognition, but, you know, who knows? Maybe it'll amount to something.
I find it very interesting because that is the largest Republican group in Arizona. They actually had 1,500 people show up for this vote. That's an incredible turnout for something like that. And, you know, over 1,150 of them voted to censor him. So I find it interesting, and it tells me that Arizona, you know, may be taking a lead on trying to get conservative values back. I don't know. But I thought it was pretty interesting.
Land of Goldwater, my friend. Land of Goldwater.
There you go. That's a good point. In the meantime, Chris Christie, man, I tell you what, is this guy stepping in it or what? He had two appointees, apparently, on November 14th of last year. One of his appointees, one of his aides, had decided to shut down two lanes of a bridge in New Jersey. That was the major bridge in New Jersey, and it created a backlash on the first day of school, and they did it purely intentionally as a payback to the Democratic mayor for not supporting Chris Christie for governor. Now, Chris Christie is claiming that he had no knowledge of this, that you know, these people did this on their own. A lot of people are actually claiming BS, and I'm one of those people. I don't think that there's any way Chris Christie could not know that something of that magnitude was happening and sit there with a straight face and tell us so. What do you think about that that's developing out there?
Well, I think it's absolutely, you know, I don't know if he ordered it, but, I mean, let's face it, if he listens, if he talks to the police or the transit people or anything, you stop up one of the most heavily traveled bridges in the United States, it's going to make the evening news. So, you know, and it went on for more than one day, and that's the thing. If it had just been one day, you know, it's almost been like a practical joke. But it went on for a couple of days. So it's like, hey, you know, on the way home, you're listening to the radio, you're watching the news. Holy hell, you know, the George Washington Bridge or whatever is a mess. You know, I'm the governor. If I'm Chris Christie, I'm the governor. And I say, hey, whoa, what the hell was – anybody know anything about that?
Right.
Come on. Well, it's not like some – some convoluted deal with MSD and interest rate swaps or something like that that makes your eyes roll back in your head and you go to sleep and you don't know what the hell, you know, and it takes years to play out. You know, this was on the news. So if you're the governor, if you're the governor, you at least have your meeting in the morning and say, hey, what the hell happened on the bridge?
Well, that's it. And, you know, this isn't the first time he's been in trouble. According to Newsmax, Andrew McCarthy, who's a former federal prosecutor and columnist for National Review, you know, he is really taking a scathing look at Chris Christie's acting stupid here, and he's pointing this out. In 2010, Chris Christie's education chief, Brett Schundler, was ousted for purportedly lying to Christie about not supplying the data that was necessary, and it ended up costing New Jersey $400 million in federal Race to the Top funds. But Brett Schundler went on record, a very respected conservative, former Jersey City mayor, he went on record stating that he told Chris Christie himself about it, and then the feds denied the New Jersey funding. Chris Christie acted like he didn't know, and that Schundler lied to him, and Christie promised him he wouldn't lose his job, and of course he fired him anyway. So, you know, this isn't the first time Chris Christie has had somebody else take the fall, you know, so it really doesn't give him a lot of credibility playing dumb, does it?
No, it's, you know, hey, these guys thinking about running for president, you know, got Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, and although Bill Clinton was actually quite half bad, but,
right.
You know, these guys are, they don't know what the hell's going on. It's like, hey, guess what? If we want four more years of Obama, Chris Christie's right there, man. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. I didn't know. Like, really?
Oh, I agree.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I just don't see how a popular two-term governor in a small state, I mean, let's face it, it's a small state. Something like that happens as far as landmass goes. The TV stations, it's not like something happened in Louisville and, oh, well, the TV station didn't, you know, the power wouldn't get to Frankfort. No, this is, you saw it on the news. And I say, he, two-term powerhouse governor, I'm sorry, nothing happens without him knowing it.
Right. And I find it very interesting. And, you know, and Christie, you know, of course, lied and said Schundler didn't tell him, and that's why he fired him. You know, said he lied to him. But then the interesting thing is that Schundler went out and released the emails that proved that he did tell Chris Christie. So, you know, Chris Christie has no credibility here. So I find that very, very interesting. And this Bridgegate thing is what they're calling it now. Bridgegate is going to stay. I mean, he was able to get out of this other one pretty quickly. But since Chris Christie is being talked about as a potential 2016 presidential nominee, this Bridgegate thing isn't going to go away. We're going to take a break, folks. When we get back, we're going to get into some other things. We're going to talk about Congress and unemployment and things like that. So stick around. We'll be right back. This is the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
And we are back, folks. Yes, we are right here at the Ed Spencer Show here on the MVM Radio Network. Don't forget, as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 are the numbers. And for you guys on the listening queue, we appreciate it. Just hit that number one on your dial pad, and we'll get you on air as soon as possible. You know, Ed, we've been talking about these unemployment benefits and everything else. Congress cut unemployment benefits right after Christmas, which was the stupidest time in the world to do it. Then we've got the Senate said they wanted to go ahead and reinstate them. The Republicans give them a plan, and the Republicans are on board with reinstating unemployment benefits, and the Senate is refusing to do it because they don't like the way it's being paid for. What's really interesting here is, and this is what we keep trying to tell everybody, the thing that should drive everybody nuts is, for the first time in history, most members of Congress, more than half the members of Congress, are millionaires. They don't care.
Yeah.
At least 268 of the 534 members of Congress have an average net worth of over $1 million. And this is in 2012, and it's just going to go up from there. And I tell you how bad it is. The top 10 richest members of Congress, you're going to love this, folks. The top 10 richest members of Congress, seven of them are Democrats. Mark Warner, number two, $257 million. Jared Polis out of Colorado, $198 million. John Delaney, $155 million. These are net worths. Scott Peters, California. Blumenthal, Connecticut. Jay Rockefeller, of course. And Nancy Pelosi. Seven out of the top ten are millionaire Democrats worth tens of millions of dollars. You think they give a crap about unemployment?
Well, I think they do as far as politically goes, and I'm not going to say that a rich person can't be sympathetic to, you know, a person on unemployment. I'm sure they are to a degree. You know, it's like, wow, they have to be able to sit back and empathize or sympathize somewhat, you know, with you have all this wonderful stuff and you think to yourself how it would suck to actually have to live on ramen noodles, you know, two out of three meals a day. I'm sure they care, but they, you know, again, they don't care enough. Because let's face it, the one thing, and I've been on this jag for a while, is when you get that kind of money, you're not getting it because your paycheck is $20,000 a week.
Right.
You're getting it in capital gains. And when you get it in capital gains, you're not paying unemployment insurance on it. You know, your earnings, not like anybody else. You're not paying Social Security taxes on it. You're not paying Medicare. So on top of everything else, yes, these people have amassed, you know, obviously, millions of dollars every year. And they, like I said, they're not doing it with a $20,000 a week paycheck. They're doing it through cap gains. So bastards sit up there and they run their mouths and everything, but the very nature of their wealth increases, the very nature of their income, means that in most cases probably not paying what would be called their fair share.
I totally agree with you, and I bet you 10-1 this caller is going to tell us the same thing. I think this is Paul with Stop It. How are you, sir?
Good afternoon, good evening, gentlemen. Listen, I have no sympathy for the wealthy people because they really don't have any sympathy for those who aren't in their elite group. I tell you why. Any argument that suggests that these people be for the rest of us, I think it is just not a good observation. I tell you why. These folks operating from a superior position. They are not what 99% of the people are in this country.
Right.
Cannot relate. Remember a few years ago, I forget who the candidate was, he went into a grocery store and wanted to convey the impression that he understood the average person's dilemma by not even quoting some price on, I think it was a loaf of bread or a gallon of gasoline, and he was just 100% out of touch. I don't remember who it was, but the point is, he illustrated how the ruling class looked at stuff.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think George Bush had a problem when he went into a fast food restaurant. He had neither cash nor credit card, you know, because people wait on you. I think Mitt Romney had the problem when he tried to do the fast food thing, and he went through and didn't know how to work the credit card swipe machine at the drive-thru, you know. Like,
well,
yeah,
so was Joe Biden.
All right, Mitt. And I think Barack Obama Joe Biden got his butt chewed by some bakery guy a while back. He said, you know, you can quit doing it. And Joe Biden's like, what do you have to be such a prick for? It's like, you know, wait a minute. You're in his shop. Shut up, Joe.
Yep.
See,
go ahead, Paul.
The fiasco, I think, is illustrative also of the same group of people who decided best for everybody else while at the same time making sure that they're not encumbered with the great solution that they want to force down everybody else's throat. I heard a phrase I used to, for the longest time, I've been calling this group of people the ruling elite here in this country. It's just kind of ironic considering that's either the country was founded was to get away from such environment. But the term I am now using, the ruling elite, is the predator class. And I think the predator class is very, very descriptive of what these people are doing. They care about anyone other than their little group. They care about making sure that their lifestyle remains unencumbered by any of the responsibilities that a civilization has put on. So predator class is, again, making all these decisions and ramming all this stuff down our throat. And the good news is, historically, when the president rises to so much power, what does history tell us usually happens?
Well, the predator class fights back. You know.
No,
this predator class
fights back in the form of a revolution.
And what makes this really interesting, though, I mean, you know, they're arguing over peanuts because they both are trying to find $20 billion to pay for this, and their plans are different. That's it. Where the Republicans want to take the $20 billion more up front away from, you know, like illegal aliens taking extended, you know, tax credits and stuff that they're not entitled to, you know, those are billions of dollars that they want to take away from the illegal aliens. And they want to reshift that and give it back to the veterans that were just cut, you know. And there's different ways to do it. And the way that the Senate Democrats want to do it basically, and I'm really simplifying things, folks, but the way the Democrats want to do it basically is they want to add, they want the $20 billion to be paid later, like in 2024. You know, they continue wanting to delay. So, you know, the problem is there are people that are really hurting. The Democrats are telling us that this is what they want to do. They want to put this up. The Republicans are totally on board with it. So who are the real obstructionists? Who are the real obstructionists? That's the thing for me. And you know, we're having a problem with that. And so this unemployment situation has got to work out.
I look at it like, you know, there's obstructionists. Yeah, I think the Democrats could be called obstructionists. But by the same token, you know, we're talking about people hurting here. And the Republicans are basically playing the poison pill game. It's like, okay, well, you know, we want to fund it, but here's where we want to fund it. You know, couldn't be something, I don't know, like maybe removing some subsidies from some major corporation who's making billions of dollars and laying people off, or at least not hiring people. Now, couldn't be that, could it? Couldn't be $20 billion. Gee, we couldn't not buy those tanks that the government, that the military doesn't want already? Couldn't do that, now could we? You know, the thing is these idiots get up there and they agree at what they want to do, and then each one of them offers one stupid, and in most cases it is stupid because it's designed to be a poison pill. They offer one stupid funding mechanism. They don't sit there and say, hey, can we take a little from some surplus military stuff that they don't want anyway. Maybe we can take a little here, a little there, a little here, a little there. We'll make it happen. But no, it's all got to come from one place because they sabotage the other guys.
Well, that's it. And today, Harry Reid decided to postpone. They were actually scheduled to vote on two different measures. They had a pair of votes scheduled to go, and Harry Reid decided to go ahead and delay the votes, trying to work out a deal supposedly with Republicans. From what they're saying, Senator Dean Heller of Nevada and Senator Susan Collins of Maine were going to try to add a provision to the bill that was going to restore the full cost of living benefits to military retirees. So, you know, that's a big thing. And here once again, we're playing with two different issues. We're playing with how they're screwing the military retirees and tying that into unemployment compensation. You know, this is always the biggest problem because they can't do anything on standalone legislation. So I don't know what's going to happen here. They'll probably have a vote tomorrow. We can only hope so. But it's interesting that this is still going on. In the meantime, you know, we've had all these people going without money since December 28th. And when you talk about the national economy, you know, that's unemployment money. I get that. But that money isn't being spent, is it? Because it's not available. So what's that doing to the retail industry and the supply side? You know, so it's incredible what's going on. Hopefully they'll work it out in the very near future because there's a lot of people hurting. But here's another story. I'm going to move quick for the next couple of minutes. But here's another story out of American Overlook. The Obama administration finally confirmed that Islamic extremists were responsible for the terrorist attack that killed our Americans in Benghazi in September 2012. It took them over a year to do it. But, you know, they finally admitted it, which makes Hillary Clinton look like a fool, you know, because she is the one who has always denied that. And now the State Department announced that these Muslim extremist groups were responsible for the attacks, and this is all through Secretary of State John Kerry, so, you know, who took over for Hillary Clinton. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it just falls into the duh category. I mean, you know, it's just, I wish everybody would just come clean with it because, I mean, we're told initially it was a video, and then we get all these conflicting stories, you know, and part of it falls into the category of a cover-up. The other part falls into, you know, can you just say you screwed up? You know, can anybody say that in politics anymore? Like, you know, obviously you did. It didn't work. It didn't end well. Somebody screwed up, but I look at that and that cover story, I get with it, the New York Times or something tried to run it, says, oh, hey, maybe it was about the video. It's like, really? No.
Oh, I hear you.
I just get back and look at it and says, you know, it's a hubris, it's this arrogance of the political class. It, you know what? You screwed up. You know, at least when they bombed the barracks, when Reagan was the president, he stood up and said, I screwed up. Now, love or hate Reagan, and I'm sort of indifferent on him, but he at least stood up and said, you know what, this is on me. I, you know, no bullets in the guns, this, that, and the other. This was on me. People can't say that anymore. You just can't just sit back and go, you know what, we screwed up. We underestimated the attack. We underestimated it. You know, we missed the intel. Just admit it. The American public could go, hey, you know, it's a big world. They speak a different language. They're pretty savvy. You know, it happens. Thank you for...
Well, I'm in total agreement. And yeah. I tell you, we've got other stories coming out, too. As we know, Robert Gates put out a book last week, and he was exposing all the problems in the Oval Office. You know, but late last week, retired U.S. Air Force General Tom McInerney confirmed basically everything that Gates had put out and said that Gates should have put it out sooner. McInerney went on record as saying that there are at least 10 or 15 members of the Muslim Brotherhood working within the U.S. government. And, of course, he mentioned one of them as being Huma Abedin, as we all know, is Hillary Clinton's right arm. But, you know, but he went on record as telling the people that, you know, and it's time that this stuff got exposed. So he's telling us that Gates is right. We've got all of these situations going on. It's not hard to put together why the lies were there to try to protect the Muslim Brotherhood, but somebody needs to explain someday how in the hell we allowed this to happen and why it's still going on today, because this is all Barack Obama.
And like I say, even if it just comes down to we missed the information, we underestimated this, we didn't think it would degenerate that fast, that bad, you know, just something. Keep this obfuscation, this ongoing lies. It's insulting.
Oh, it really is. Really is. And that's the problem. And, you know, we're going to switch to Obamacare for a couple of minutes. And, Paul, by the way, your mic's still live. I'm going to let you jump in anytime you want to. We're going to switch to Obamacare for a minute, and I'll tell you why. On Friday, the government announced that it's going to change contractors. Imagine that. They're getting rid of CGI Federal, the failed contractor in Canada that tried to do the same thing, the ones that's tied to Michelle Obama and her friends. They're going to get rid of them, and they're going to go ahead and hire a place called Accenture. According to President Obama, CGI has been linked to all the problems they've got. Obamacare is screwed up because of it. So he's going to switch to this. And what's really fascinating here is the government's going to give Accenture a $45 million contract for 1 year. They're taking over CGI Federal. But once again, they're going with somebody that is tied to Obama. And I tell you why. Because the one thing that nobody in the media is mentioning today, and this is coming from WND, is that the president is taking in $286,000 from Accenture employees, family members, and his political action committee. Accenture, he is the number one person that they've been contributing money to. The closest one that they've ever gotten was former President George W. Bush, where they gave him $164,000. So Obama is once again going to pay off one of his buddies and his bundlers with a government contract. Is this a smart thing to do?
Doesn't matter whether it's smart, Ted. It's the way the game is played. It's the way the game is played. Well, by the way, does WND mention anything about getting any money back from that bungled Obamacare rollout from that Canadian firm? Are we getting any money
nobody,
back from
nobody
them?
Has. I actually looked
Isn't
for
that
earlier.
Amazing?
No.
Yeah, nobody
no,
has.
And for what it's worth, they are... they're terminating that contract.
Yeah.
It was going to expire in a couple of weeks. It was going to expire in a couple of weeks anyway.
So, but no, they're not saying one thing about getting any money back from anywhere. And what's really interesting too is this Accenture. Not only are they one of Barack Obama's biggest supporters financially, but in 2011, they had received an $85 million contract for the Kansas Healthcare Database, and that funding came from the federal government. So they're used to living on our tax dollars. But here's something that's interesting too. We continue talking about these tax havens and tax loopholes, and Barack Obama's going to shed all of this. Well, here one of his biggest contributors is now going to take over Obamacare.gov. But Accenture used to be incorporated in America, but they then moved their corporation to the tax haven of Bermuda. The firm is currently incorporated in Dublin, Ireland, even though its headquarters are in Chicago. So they're using the same tax base, the same loopholes, the same everything that Barack Obama keeps saying he's trying to close. He's empowering these people with our federal dollars because they keep giving him money to get elected. Is that not incredible?
Predator class, Ed. Another example. Predator class. Martin calls it the political class. It's the same difference. The predator class.
Yeah.
They do not care about anyone except themselves. Most of us can go to hell.
Oh, I agree.
And the fact is they get to a point they are so arrogant. I'm sorry, Ed. They don't give a crap whether you know or not, because they're going to bank tens of millions of dollars. They don't.
Right.
They just get to a point. It's what's amazing to me. No honor, no shame. They'll take this. It's like this Canadian firm that bungled the Obamacare rollout, and the people who in his administration who admittedly made the last minute changes that made it worse. Has anybody been canned? I mean, have they been canned? Has anybody had a clawback like we were talking about doing with Wall Street for a while? No. No, these guys, they are so arrogant at some point that they will take your money, not deliver the good services, and just look at you and go, what?
Yeah. But they've had no reason.
Care.
But see, that's the whole thing.
They haven't enough shame to say, I didn't earn that. I kind of screwed that up. You should
they
at least
don't
take
care.
Some of it back because we delivered a faulty product. Thank you for not suing our asses and throwing us in jail. But they don't. They just take the money and say, so what?
And that's because the decision makers that fund this stuff know they're going to get away with it. They don't care. The corporation doing the job doesn't care because at the end of the day, we the people are still electing these clowns to make these decisions for us with no repercussions against them. And I tell you, when you look at Obamacare, here's one that's really going to surprise you. It's coming out of the Washington Examiner. But, you know, we continue to talk about Walmart being a, you know, being a corporate welfare citizen, and they depend on us for everything. But one thing they don't depend on us for is health care. A lot of people now are finding out that Walmart, who has been the target of all these unions and liberal activists and all this other stuff, you know, criticizing their health care plans, they have now found out, the Washington Examiner did a comparison of Walmart's health insurance programs versus the Obamacare insurance programs, and found out that Walmart's plan is a lot cheaper, and they have a lot better access to high-quality medical care than Obamacare. When you look at this, just to give you some idea, Walmart furnishes employees benefit information to the Examiner so they can look at it, you know, but Walmart offers its employees two standard plans. They get an HRA, a health reimbursement account, all right, or they get something called an HRA high, but everything is through Blue Cross and Blue Shield. But what's interesting here is they include free hip replacement surgery, free knee replacement surgery. They include twice as many hospitals at a much cheaper rate. A monthly premium for an individual who works at Walmart in their HRA plan, a monthly premium is as low as, dig this, $40 a month. A family can get coverage through Walmart for $160 a month. How does that compare to the $500, $600, $700 a month for all these Obamacare plans? So, you know, you got to look at this. And by the way, they don't use age and gender to alter your premium rates. The rates are the same for all of the 1.1 million enrolled employees as of today. You know, the unsubsidized premium for a non-smoking couple is going to can cost on Obamacare, you know, somewhere around $1,365 a month. The same plan for a smoking couple at Walmart is $134 a month. What's the problem here, guys?
Well, I would say, you know, granted, part of it has to do with demographics. You, you know, if you've been in Walmart, you know that there's going to be some special needs people who are probably pulling up, you know, some sort of assistance. A lot of retirees that are probably pulling Medicare. So, you know, they're going to be covered to an extent. So that cheapens it. And then you got a lot of younger employees. So, I mean, they've got some demographics working for them, whereas Obamacare, you know, tries to sugarcoat the fact that they're wanting to insure the sickest of the sick, and the only way we're going to do that is sticking it to the healthiest of the healthy. Walmart, yeah, it can be a little more selective. Yeah, but,
I'm glad you brought that up, because I'll tell you why.
It is the free market, and they've got a plan. You know, it works. Like I say, I'm sure they use the economies of scale. I'm sure the insurance companies understand that, you know, most of your medical costs for most people happens to be pharmaceuticals, and Walmart almost universally has pharmacies. So they like some hospitals that I'm familiar with in town, they have a mechanism with which to control the expenditures that go through their health insurance. So I'm sure if you've got Walmart health insurance and you go to the Walmart pharmacy, Walmart's going to make sure that their health insurance carrier does not have a reason to raise the premiums, because they're not going to screw you on any of the on the pharmaceuticals if you're in their plan.
Well, see, that's it. And here's the thing, too, because you mentioned the age disparity and stuff like that. A 30-year-old smoker is going to pay $428 a month. A single 30-year-old smoker is going to pay $428 a month under Obamacare, and that's on a cheap plan. They're going to pay $70 a month as a Walmart employee. A family of four would pay somewhere around $962 a month on average for the bronze plan. A Walmart family is going to pay $160. But here's what's really interesting, too. Walmart's plan will let you use eight of the country's most prestigious medical facilities. You're talking places like the Mayo Clinic and the Cleveland Clinic and stuff like that. Okay? Walmart employees and their dependents get free heart and spinal surgery. They also get free knee and hip replacements, as I've already mentioned. And, you know, Walmart hospitals are the top rated, like Mayo and Cleveland Clinics, but Obamacare doesn't cover those major hospitals, the top rated hospitals. You know, Walmart is allowing you to go to pretty much any hospital you want to. Obamacare says no. So these are some interesting things, because when you talk about
And I tell you, there's being a business owner, there is one other good reason for them to offer a very affordable, very good insurance plan, and that's workman's comp. Because, you know, workman's comp in its purest form is what people who don't have insurance, you know, or didn't have insurance, use to get themselves fixed if they hurt themselves at work. You know, we all
right.
know that that's, you know, that's abused. It's always been understood that if you pay, if you have a decent insurance plan, the likelihood that an employee that's hurt, whether on the job or off the job, you know, like it's off the job, won't say their back tightened up on them when they were at work, when it didn't.
Right.
You know, they were felling a tree or something. So I think it probably there's some cost, being that they integrate vertically that way. I'd say there's also some cost and some justification in them probably subsidizing that plan a little bit to reduce the incidence of work comp.
Well, you look at that, but here we've got situations where, you know, we're looking at Obamacare and all these major premiums that nobody can afford. All right, you're being forced into this, and we've got a corporate citizen in Walmart, and as everybody knows, I'm not a big Walmart fan. But as everybody knows, you know, if Walmart can go out and price insurance that cheaply and that competitively, then why can't Obamacare? That's a puzzling thing to me. The Democrats continue saying they want to fix Obamacare and everything else, but yet there's been no fixes in place. Here we've got Matt Bevin talking about crossing state lines, which would help control the insurance rise in cost. You've got Walmart able to go out there and insure their people this cheaply. Walmart's not going to lose any money. Okay, we've got all these different things going out here, and the Democrats continue saying that they're working to fix this Obamacare mess, but are they really? Because there's nothing going on, you know, and then you get into the whole unemployment argument that we talked about a minute ago. You know, a lot of these people that are so-called signing up for Obamacare, even right here in Kentucky, you know, we brag about having $1.1 million people have signed up with Obamacare overall, not here in Kentucky, but overall. And most of those people are going into Medicaid, and the Medicaid, 90% of those people are going into Medicaid, and Medicaid is paid by the state, not the federal. So you've got all these problems with health care. You're forcing more and more people into state-run Medicaid. What gives, man? Where is the midpoint where we've had enough?
I think it's just like inflation and the national debt, everything else. It'll come about. It's just they're able to keep papering over it because a lot of this stuff, most people that are alive haven't seen it before. But it's coming.
We'll see. Go ahead, Paul.
You're asking a question and seeking a reasonable answer in a situation that defies all sorts of reasonableness. There's nothing about their formula that is reasonable. It hasn't been reasonable from the outset. The way it was passed was unreasonable. The way that has been unreasonable. The
right.
solutions to fix it are unreasonable. You're living in la la land, trying to apply common sense and logic to a situation which does not exist. It does not exist. It's going to
shake. You may be right.
The way it shakes out, and if it results in a major economic destruction, so be it. That's the only thing. All of these people who have supported Obama and his ilk are going to wake up a little bit. They've got to feel. The thing I hate about it is that the rest of us are going to have to feel the same pain. But because we understand that it's going to ultimately crash and burn, at least we're in the process of positioning ourselves to prepare for that day, whereas the Obamaites, they're sitting there in la-la land, and they're going to get hurt the worst, which, again, is justice.
I don't disagree with you, you know, but you start factoring in all these different things. Then you've got the unemployment rate. Nobody's getting unemployment money. Those people are going to be put into other programs. You know, I mean, even the U.S. employers in December, which is typically one of the largest jumps in employment because of seasonal hires, they only added 74,000 jobs, and most of those were seasonal. Yet they're showing the unemployment rate dropping to like 6.7%. That's according to the Bureau of Labor Stats. But the problem is they're not counting anyone who's given up looking for work. because the people that are giving up looking for work account for almost two-thirds of the unemployment rate. So you take two-thirds and add it on to that, your real unemployment is somewhere around 19 to 20%. You know, and we're not doing anything to address any of these issues. Instead, we're pushing Obamacare on people, forcing them to pay more money that they don't have for less service. You know, you're not going to get healthy. You're not going to get a job. I mean, it's to the point where it's almost ridiculous.
And I'm going to once again kind of take issue with your use of the word, because we the people are not, we're not voluntary for this, and we are not doing this to ourselves. The predator class, they are doing it to everybody. They, the political, are doing us. We're not doing it.
Well,
okay.
For me, it comes down to the fact that we elect that predator class.
No, we don't, Ed. No, we don't. Because if we truly elected these people, then the election processes would be a whole lot more open and, quote, democratic than what they're not. Kentucky's election process is stacked. It's fixed in favor of the two largest parties. And that's by design. A lot of other states have the same kind of situation. Okay. So, no, we the people are being like sheep, and many of the sheep are saying, I'd rather just kind of go along to get along. I don't want any more hassle in my life. I'll pay their damn taxes. I'll sign up on their damn program. I just want to have a nice life. And, you know, so they are clearly, they think they've got a nice life. Because they enjoy being indentured servitude. They like indentured servitude.
Well,
but you know, there's a whole group
probably
of
actually,
out here that do. Well, there's a whole bunch of us that don't want indentured servitude, and we would just like for the government to get the hell out of our way.
Okay? I agree.
Those folks want to be sheep.
Yeah.
Go be a sheep.
And that's the thing. I know one thing has got to get the hell out of the way, and that's time. Time has gotten away from us. We are at the end of the hour, fastest hour on radio, folks. Paul, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. Ed Martin, final thoughts.
Well, Paul was getting fired up, wasn't he? You know, final thoughts for me is, like I said, the education system probably not doing us any favors. I don't even want to call it the news media. It's more the news entertainment industry. They're all designed to keep us asleep. They're all designed to keep us, you know, whether it's feeling good about ourselves or at least entertained, where we don't question things that go around. And right now, I've been having some ongoing discussions with people about, our congressman, John Yarmuth, and, you know, and it's all centered on this wealth-gaining thing. And it just amazes me that these guys can sit up there and say what they say, but that people are not cynical enough, they're preoccupied enough, perhaps they weren't educated enough, and perhaps they're cool with just taking what receipts they got, dropping it off at H&R Block, and you know, not giving any thought to the actual tax code outside of April 15th and getting your instant rebate. But you know, I say with me, I've been on a spoil for a little bit because I look at things like this wealth, and then you begin to realize that not only are they wealthy, you know, okay, class warfare, throw that in, everybody can connect with that. But then you start looking at how they got their wealth, you know, and it takes a little work, and it takes a little understanding, and you got to evolve to the point where you understand what you're looking at. Like I said, these guys, they're not paying the same tax rate that you're paying working contract labor. They're not, you know, anybody for that matter. They're paying a low cap gains tax rate. They're not paying into the social contract or the support or the safety nets or whatever they want to call it while they're up there pontificating on Capitol Hill. They're not paying that. They're not paying into it. You are. They're going to try to make you feel guilty about it, but people seem like sometimes it just drives me nuts that they don't take the time. They don't have the knowledge. They don't, if they're busy watching American Idol or something, they don't question these people. They're like, oh, yeah, we should all pay into Social Security. It's like, I look at it and says, no. You should pay into Social Security because guys telling me that I need to pay more into Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, whatever, higher unemployment insurance, whatever. He's not paying it, but he sounds good telling me.
Well, I hear you, brother. I hear you. I tell you, You know, there's so many things that are screwed up we need to get to. But there's a couple of things I want to point out real quick. I like the fact that we're finally starting to wake up and start seeing all of these different things. We're finally starting to talk about these different things. Here in Kentucky, I'm tickled that Senator candidate Matt Bevin is finally talking about what he believes in, so maybe we'll get a real primary here. I don't know. And by the way, Matt Bevin will be at the Los Mexicanos restaurant on Dixie Highway Thursday night at 6 o'clock. It's in the shopping center, the Snap Fitness Shopping Center, right behind Captain D's. It's up there around Valley High School area. So he'll be there on Thursday night at 6. But I tell you, we are starting to wake up. We're starting to pay attention when we're starting to realize situations like Walmart's health care costs versus Obamacare's health care costs. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. And maybe, just maybe, now that we're waking up, maybe we can finally do something to make the changes necessary to fix this train wreck that's going on in the U.S. today. That's it for tonight, folks. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, same time, same channel. We'll look for you then. In the meantime, have a great night, and Mr. Martin, we'll talk to you then.
You do the same, sir.
All right, sir. Thank you. Take care, folks.